Podtacular episode 281.
Waypoint Community Modcast episode 15.
Halo 4 Game Informer news.
For April 12th, 2012. What's up, everybody? I am Cruel Legacy, and I'm joined by my special co-host for the day,
Duststorm from Podtacular.
That's right, this is a special joint episode. We are dubbing it
Modtacular.
Beautiful. Love
is
it.
Is it Modtacular round two?
Kind of.
Although the last one, really, we didn't officially make it Modtacular. It was still mostly Waypoint Community.
Okay.
So I think we can call it this the first official Modtacular.
And Podarera has dubbed it.
Hey!
And so it shall be.
That's right.
So, 343 woke up on Monday morning and decided to... They Halo 4'd all over the internet, basically, right? Like, we've had just a...
Fordasm.
Yeah, exactly. just a massive unloading of Halo 4 news. So we wanted to get together and talk about it. Both the Waypoint Community Modcast and Podtacular were recording at the same time, so we thought, hey, we got a great idea. Let's just get a joint special going on here today. So I guess the first thing we should do is just quickly go through the list and introduce everybody. You've already heard from Dustin and myself. We also have Mike Marcoux.
Coo73 on Waypoint, Sarcasm Bully on Twitter.
Thanks for joining us, man. Jeff Easterling.
The pawns? I'm not going to say it.
Yeah, the one and only Grim Brother 1. Thanks again for coming, man.
Yeah.
Lars, you and SC Warhead, are you in the room?
April 2012. Sexy is back.
Yes.
He's sexy.
Yeah.
Man.
He
knows. Oh, shit.
Rikari Austin. Rikizzle.
I skipped a nigga in my photo.
Bad part is, Lars really said that about me.
Not what? This Lars. Stand in, Lars.
All right.
Lars double.
I might have to edit that. We'll see.
Maybe. I'll do another one.
Okay, yeah. You want to give us another intro?
We can make a joint decision on that later.
Yeah.
You guys keep talking about joints.
Okay, Scott.
Yeah,
Radford.
Man, I got my joints right here.
Scott,
did he bring a hot Zuflempa?
That's my phone. I'm sorry.
There you go. I'm throwing in some German in there that I learned from our good friend, our other good Lars, last week.
There we go. Grant, Calamari.
Konnichiwa.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
And Gregory James, you still there?
Yes.
We haven't lost you yet. Good.
Lewis.
No. I don't plan to be lost.
Thanks
when,
again.
But when he is.
I was lost. It was scary. Dark outside.
So we should probably start off we're...
with Rikizzle's birthday. Yeah.
Yeah. Woo!
Right.
That's right.
Right. Even though I'm at work right now, but it's okay.
It's okay.
Hot.
That's right.
I just want to mention our last show did somewhat of a spoiler cast of what was seen, but now since it's official, we want to talk about it again. So
yeah, last we recorded on Monday with the guys from Reddit about the leak exposure, but now that it's officially out, I guess we wanted to clear some things up.
Right.
Yeah, the news has trickled out a little bit early over the course of the weekend. So a lot of the information in the Game Informer article has been available online in various forms for you know a few days now at least. But now it's out officially. Everyone's had the chance to go over it in detail. Do you guys want to? Is there anyone who wants to? Maybe were there any issues in the article that really jumped out at any of you as being particularly noteworthy? Anything that really surprised you? Anything that made you happy or sad? Or
I'm looking forward to Spartan Ops
fight go.
Don't you mean Spec Ops?
No, I don't. Spec Ops isn't cool enough to have a campaign all its own that goes with it.
I know, right?
And if Spartan Ops is how, like, I think it might end up, especially the replayability of the missions, I'm probably not going to miss Firefight too much, really.
Yeah, but Firefight still seemed like a unique experience. But, I know it's kind of a copy of Horde mode off of Gears, but...
They must have not been able to hammer out the network issues with Firefight.
correct. It's possible. I mean, either that, or if Jeff's right about maybe what Spartan Ops might be, it might be like a really advanced form of Firefight that progresses.
Yeah, what if they just changed it to add missions into it?
That's cool. What about having like the infinite Firefight that you could just go in and just play for hours on end until you finally lose all your lives?
Yeah, we don't know that it's not possible to alter the settings in Spartan Ops, you know, just like it was to alter the settings. And I was talking with Duncan from Halo Gaff. We were all sitting at lunch the other day in Boston, and
who wasn't sitting in lunch the other day in Boston?
Yeah, that's true. I brought up the point. I wonder what changes are actually the result of maybe what Bungie kept versus what Microsoft got. For example, like, if I'm not mistaken, the term the Forge mode, like, that's an old school Bungie term. So it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, maybe Forge mode by name isn't in Halo 4, but they just call it something else. And I wonder if maybe there was something similar with Firefight itself. If, like, maybe Firefight was something that was registered specifically with Bungie, and so they weren't able to have that name, and they figured, well, if they're not going to have the name, you might as well change up, you know, the name and the mode and have it be kind of visually and you know, auditorily separate from what you've seen in ODST and in Reach. So that could be something.
I think it might be interesting to see what they do in terms of, they're talking about weaving story into a lot of different things that don't normally have story, multiplayer, the Spartan Ops mode, things like that. I think it might be kind of cool if they took that to the next level and put it into Forge, and maybe you play as like a, because it takes place in all these Forerunner places, maybe you play, take the role of a Forerunner building these worlds, right? I think that might be kind of cool.
Sorry, Lars, go ahead.
Regarding Firefight, correct me if I'm wrong, but the only thing that has been stated is that Firefight doesn't exist as a separate play, not playlist, but game type, like in the way that. Yeah, because that's what they said. They never said that Firefight isn't in Halo 4. They just said that Halo Fight doesn't exist in the same way that we've been known to. That doesn't confirm that it's not in Halo 4. That it made it pretty obvious that it's not going to be as it has been, but that doesn't mean like there are certainly possibilities that the somewhat Firefight experience can be in one way or the other created in Halo 4, but that it doesn't exist in the same way in a separate play list or game mode or whatever. In Halo 4. That's what I got for like the quote from, if it was Game Informer or where the first like data information trickled out.
And we've got to remember too, this is 343's game. Not to say that, you know, they couldn't use Bungie's name, because I'm pretty sure damn near everything transferred over in that, you know, the sale to Microsoft.
Yeah.
What I think is more so them putting their own spin on it. Now, Spartan Ops the best name to use? No. Just not the word Ops. I'm not guaranteed, but I'm pretty sure a lot of this stuff, just like Lars was saying, will come back, but it's just going to have a 343 twist on it rather than a Bungie twist.
Well, and that name might not be set in stone yet. Granted that, I mean, it in all intents and purposes, it might be the final name, but it could change.
Yeah.
Well, we even know that some of the multiplayer maps, you know, Warhouse and Wraparound, aren't the final names.
Right. So, I mean, all the stuff in terms of names for all these things coming out could be either code words or they might be the final names. We don't know yet.
The comparison that jumped into my head when we heard about Spartan Ops was if anyone played the most recent Splinter Cell game.
Yep.
There was like a two-player cooperative mode that had its own side story running parallel to the main campaign.
Which, no, it was a prequel.
Right, sorry, right, a prequel, right. But it meaning it tied directly in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of the concept I had in my head.
Yeah.
I also thought that maybe that the Spartan Ops side of it is their way to get this flexible vehicle within the game where they can release whatever type of content they want. Look at like the Modern Warfare 3, like Spec Ops missions. There is like a firefight / horde mode mission in there that you can play over and over, and you pick the map you want to play it on, and it's just wave after wave after enemies come to you. So I think it's basically like their way of saying, hey, why don't we use this to put all the things we might want to add to the game later in the future? All the hooks will be there so they can do that.
Yeah, well, and they even said that like each content every week is going to have 5 new missions. Who's to say that one of those missions is not a very firefight-styled mission in and of itself? And, you know, that it doesn't mean that they also don't put in, like you said, those hooks, that we don't get to edit some of that stuff as well.
And that was a lot of the complaints from like previous games, is what they could and could not change because they didn't have the foresight to see the flexibility that they would need within the game to change certain aspects of it. But it sounds like the Spartan Ops will just be that little nugget that's in there that they can play with and add whatever content they want.
Yeah. Going back a bit, regarding like when the rights to Halo was stayed with Microsoft, there are certain things that stayed with Bungie, like the Marathon symbol. If you notice, all the things that has been released after Bungie got out from Microsoft, typically in the logos on the books, they typically
had Microsoft
the...
Yeah, but Microsoft had nothing to do with Marathon.
What?
Microsoft had nothing to do with Marathon.
That
no,
was
exactly.
Pre-Microsoft, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so
that's what
Bungie
I'm saying.
Knows this.
I'm sorry, when I say everything went, I'm not talking about, you know, Myth, Oni, Marathon, anything like that. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, but that was just one point. I was calling to that with Forge because
yeah,
Forge
you're just using it as an example.
Yeah, because Forge was the content or map creator for Marathon, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's possible that we won't see the name Forge, like you said earlier, because
that's possible.
That might be tied to the Marathon franchise, which still has its ride with Bungie.
But I don't think that matters. I mean, no one cares if it's called Forge or not. What they care about is if there's a level editor in there, right?
Yeah.
It's like
I would like to see. I mean, I don't know how possible it is, but I would actually love to see something a little bit more akin to even like Far Cry 2's level editor. Like that to me was a great level editor as far as the, you know, kind of sticking with the restrictions of a current gen console, but also really giving you a lot of the flexibility that usually PC players are used to with the terrain editing and, you know, and the buildings and things. I mean, just terrain editing alone, like I would love to see that and maybe some skybox, modular design where you can switch out skyboxes.
Weather. I've been saying it for so long, put in weather.
Maybe some weather.
But
or different climates, basically.
Maybe some climates.
Like you said, I'd love to see a map creator rather than a map editor. Like the creator in.
Yeah, you have to do that on the PC. And Frankie already said that they're not going to invest in anything PC related for Halo. So
no, but so would that mean like the what we consider a map editor, as in the Far Cry one, like the CryEngine map editor for the console. That's more akin to a map created, in my opinion, than a map editor, because you can start with a blank canvas.
I don't know what that map editor is like because I haven't played the game.
Like, you can start out with nothing, and you can build a terrain, you can add trees. It's not like you take a pre-existing map and edit it.
It's very much like a PC map editor. You start with a terrain, and you can depress it or basically, you know, terraform it, add foliage, add water. You would actually raise and lower the global water level. It was wonderful.
And this is on
I've been using
that's on console. Yeah, it's on the console version of Far Cry 2.
All right.
Yeah, and it's also on a previous Far Cry game, the Instincts Predator, and I've been using them extensively. I've been using the map editor for Far Cry 2 more than I've played Far Cry 2 itself.
We use the Far Cry 2 map editor when we do our tech classes, the ones that I teach when we do video game design courses.
Yeah.
And it works really good even with young students. We'll get middle school students in there and let them utilize that to teach them simple map making and how to use the resources of your map correctly and how to validate a map for certain game types and things like that. And it gives them a really good appreciation for how difficult it is to make a really good balanced map that also looks neat, plays well, et cetera. But I mean, goodness, with the stuff that you see people do in just what we've had in Forge, I mean, something like that would be ridiculous. I mean, I'm already looking forward to whatever advancements they have with Forge, even if it's not a full-on map editor. I'm sure there are going to be advancements in there, and I'm looking forward to how creative the community is going to be able to get.
I just have one thing to say about that. Please, something other than gray, or some variants on gray.
Yeah, see, that's something that I think is far more important than, I mean, a train editor would be great. That would be awesome,
right.
But even if we have something just very similar to what we had in Reach, but the ability to customize the look of the pieces a little further, whether it's just a color set or a texture set. We've mentioned all this on the show before, but I think that would be a big enough step to make a lot of people happy.
I pitched my idea. I hope it happens.
On one of our shows, I proposed the idea of doing like themes. So you would have basically the same Forge set, but you could change the theme and do it from Forerunner to Covenant to Human, and all the textures would be the same, and all the models would basically be the same size, but you have the different variants just in the textures.
That would be cool.
So, I mean, even the small change of that, I think, would be better, or make Forge better, being able to apply a texture set to Forge items.
Not even the texture. I still pull for the boarding action ploy. And I got to tell somebody about it today, and it was freaking exciting. But I want to see Forge World in space with a battle, especially hearing about the Infinity and whatnot. I want to see a battle between...
Space battle.
Yep.
Yeah. No, a battle between a UNSC ship and also a Covenant ship. And imagine having both of those things like floating through space, possibly dead in space, but they're torn open so you can kind of see the interiors of them and whatnot. So if you use that as a Forge World, it gives you three different sets of things to go with. You can have the Covenant side of it, and you can, explore the inside of that ship and create maps that are themed like Gemini or Midship. And you can have the space side of things where, you can play with a palette that kind of reminds you of Condemned, or you can have the UNSC side of things.
It could be like the beginning of Halo 2 when the two one ship gets boarded by the other, but you tear them away a little bit.
That'd be awesome.
Going on that, what would be really awesome to see was, considering that we now have seen actually space flight in Halo Reach and also zero gravity to regular gravity mode in multiplayer maps, it'd be really awesome to see if they could implement that with vehicles in Halo 4 in multiplayer maps. So,
what do you mean, just like by putting in space vehicles or like a bike?
Have any of you guys played the Battlefront?
Star Wars Battlefront?
Oh yeah,
is one of my favorite games ever. Yeah.
Yeah, the space battles where you have a certain amount of ships and you spawn in those ships and you pick up vehicles and you go and attack the other ship and board the other ships, but on perhaps a smaller scale. And
what I really liked about that is it let you really role play. Like, you had people that just were really awesome troop transport pilots, and they loved the shit out of doing that. And it mattered. Like, they would fly in, they would, avoid gunfire, fly you in, drop you off so you could wreak havoc on the ship, get you out of there. I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah, and when we see a certain amount of that, even now in Halo, with the Halo Wheelers. Like dedicated Warthog drivers.
I mean, I'll also say that if you look at Halo CE, people have made space battle maps, and they actually work pretty well. And there have been some people that have modded the game to a point where they got more than 16 people in there, and they had an all-out space battle.
Awesome.
That'd be intense.
So, I mean, it's definitely...
I don't know if we can talk about this with pants on.
Who's wearing pants?
Yeah, it'll be just like the room at PAX.
Oh! I've seen the bathroom picture.
Look at the robe. Now, back
now look at your robe. Now back to me. Now back to the robe. Now back to me.
Nevin's wife loves that picture.
Naked, and so am I.
Guys, we should not stray too far from the Game Informer article, because that's what we're trying to cover a little bit. What else was brought up?
That would be in true potacular fashion.
Yeah, but I don't have 2 hours.
This is
true. Yeah, you do. You don't need 2 hours.
What else was brought up in the article there that you guys want to hit on in particular?
I'd hit that. I think there was a lot of things that were on the multiplayer side that were brought up that may have been embellished a little bit, or at least I hope so. I guess the randomized weapon spawns or drops, for instance.
Now, why is that a bad thing, though?
I just think it's going to be a type. I don't think it's going to be a forced thing upon.
No. But why is it bad?
I really don't think it's bad. I was just saying that think that a lot of people think it's going to be on every game type.
I was listening to the Halo Council last night, and they were tearing that thing apart like crazy.
Well, I don't like it from a competitive side because of the whole randomness thing of it.
Do you really think they're going to put that in a competitive scene? I don't think that's something that
it's not going to be like it's going to throw it down your throat. I think
even being competitive, I mean, if it's random. Random, in theory, should level the playing field, and if it's competitive, then you should be good enough to win with a randomized set like that.
But, correct me if I'm wrong, but having it been stated that it isn't exactly random, that, we don't know enough.
We don't know enough.
Yeah, we don't know what the random is about.
I'm pretty sure that I've seen that regarding the weapon drops, that they aren't random, that they have preset.
There's preset points where they would spawn, and you don't know which of those preset points it's going to appear at any given time.
It's like invasion.
It's like the invasion player stuff, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you capture a point, and then there's a place where it will appear, but you don't necessarily know every time where it's going to show up.
It's probably
hopefully it'll be like a drop pod.
I really hated the random spawn where they just spawned at areas, but he didn't know when they spawned there. I would more likely to see
that's why it was called Crazy King.
So that's right. So we don't know whether the random is specifically applying to the type of weapon spawns or the timing of it or where
it's only power weapons too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
All of the weapons are spawning around randomly. Like it's like, you know, rockets or sniper or a shotgun or you know, something like that.
It has been confirmed it's only needlers.
So again, what's so wrong with it?
Yeah.
Besides, it's random, because that's not a fucking excuse.
Because it's different than what was in Halo 3.
That's wrong.
We can't have that. Well, since you listened to the Halo Council, Dustin, what did they have an opinion of why they thought it was wrong?
They were thinking that it would make Halo noobs a little bit or get luckier, and it's not as it's not good for a professional standpoint of Halo, because it's not a level playing field anymore.
Wait a second, that's a more level playing field.
In a certain respect it is, and in a certain respect it isn't. Because
it's not the same level playing field that it was.
Here's the theory behind it. I mean, the people who are against the random weapon spawns, their point of view is that part of playing well as a team is understanding the important points of the map and fighting for.
Yeah, it's all about map control.
Of the map.
Yeah, and, but part of being good is being able to adjust on the fly to a situation.
Now I agree, and I think both sides of the argument are. It's not that they're wrong, but I think a lot of people are just arguing about the wrong thing. I think that random weapon spawns or set weapon spawns, either way, how well it works is completely dependent on the map design. If the maps are designed well around random weapon spawns, in that you have a list of three or four or five potential locations where the rocket launcher can spawn, and each one of them is a defensible area that is interesting to fight around and but not too easy to camp, and like then it'll be fine. It'll be great. The competitive players will still have their map control issues to worry about.
I mean, the thing I think that they have an issue with is that when you make it where it's random timings of weapons, it doesn't come down to skill anymore. It comes down to luck.
And if you and that's see what the reason why some people
no, you can't
like
it doesn't though.
It does even come down to skill because if two people are running for something and you have to fight to get there.
Yeah, but if a power weapon spawns in the mid, like if one team has map control and they're lined up for where
weapon
spawns would normally be. Hang on, let me finish.
Go ahead.
If they were lined up and have good map control, and if a random weapon spawn just managed to drop into the enemy team, and they were in a position that they really shouldn't have any chance of coming back, they get some of those power weapons, and they make a huge comeback because of a random weapon spawn.
But that goes back to what Nevin was saying about map design. I don't think that you would necessarily have a power weapon, you know, randomly spawn directly in the base of the enemy team. I mean, most power weapons already, when they're just placed in a map, aren't in the initial spawn areas. It's kind of an equal opportunity approach to get to them.
Right.
So,
and again, this comes down to not knowing what exactly is meant by this random weapon system.
True. This is context laden.
Well, and this is all going off of speculation right now. So,
and this, Dustin, you're leading really well into. We had a big email discussion earlier today, me and like all of us modcasters, about
Do I not count anymore?
Sorry.
I said, do I not count anymore?
No, you do. I'm saying you didn't see this email discussion right. That we have, but you're bringing it up perfectly, what we were talking about, which is that a huge problem that we have with all of these arguments going on in the community right now is that all of this information has been released to us with zero context to understand it. Like we've only been given enough information to guess and bicker and argue, but nobody has enough information to actually have a freaking clue what to expect or what
right.
The game's going to be like. Wait. And that's what I think is a bit of a problem with. I don't know if it's the information and the way 343 divulged it, or if it's the way the Game Informer article was written, or a combination of both.
That's probably a little bit of both.
Likely a combination of both. Yeah.
Because I feel a little bit like I know that the fans are clamoring for more info. We're begging for more info. And I feel like 343 are in this situation where they're like, we don't want to show anything substantial about the game yet, because it's, you know, I understand from that point of view. It's like you don't want to show stuff before you feel it's ready to show. And so, fine, that's cool. But these little pieces of non-information, I think it's just causing problems. I don't think it's whetting any fans' appetites for information. I think it's just making people uncertain about what kind of game is being made.
See, we have a whole podcast about the whole non-information thing that 343 is giving us right now.
Yeah, that was when they were first releasing info. But the whole point of exactly what you're saying and the whole competitive side, if you want to say the MLG community, the reason why, you know, they aren't too comfortable with everything is they don't even know if Halo is going to continue on their circuits, and the more stuff that they don't know, it's kind of frustrating for them, because if Halo 4 isn't going to be a good game, if MLG thinks that, they're not going to keep Halo Reach around. So.
I'll be completely honest with you. Like, I honestly think that part of the reason that they're freaking out is because, just as you were mentioning, that I think that they're concerned about whether or not Halo is going to stay around in the professional circuit. And I think a big part of the reason, really, a lot of people don't like MLG, and I know this is why I don't like it, is because it's like a little club, right? And I think maybe they feel threatened. You know, they're talking about how it's going to give the noobs an advantage. And to me, that just seems really high and mighty, right? Like, oh, how could someone that's not an MLG possibly beat us at our game, right? Like, it belongs to them. And that's a strength in the Halo community, that people feel ownership over the games. But it's also a disadvantage, because then you get people who do things like this where the, you know, they think that other people don't feel the same way. So they get super protective over it, and they get very upset when things change and it's not what they want.
The only thing about that is MLG has been established as kind of the professional standard. So while, yes, that's true that they're getting all up and defensive about it, you have to think that MLG is a standard for professional gaming. But at the same time, these people don't necessarily represent – I mean, they represent a good majority of MLG because they're some of the top figureheads. But there are all the other players that we don't quite know what their opinions are on this and might not get a chance to.
The MLG crowd's got to realize, too, that they've been – 3-for-3 has specifically said they've been talking to the MLG community and players and Sundance to make sure that it's still going to be playable for them. So I don't know why they're freaking out, because they're going to have their version of Halo one way or another. It may not be the default way, but they're going to have a setting that's pretty much
in,
for the
it's in 343's best interest to do something like, you know, something for that community. I mean, they've had a lot. I mean, really, you know, MLG has helped Halo get some of the recognition that it had, but MLG also would never have gotten where it is today without Halo.
Yeah.
So, you know, it really has been kind of like a symbiotic relationship where each has benefited the other. Not that it necessarily has been without its issues and hiccups, but that's the nature of sports in general. There's always issue. If you name a sport, there's always an issue with some new rules that come out or you know, a different way that you do something. What is a level playing field? I mean, goodness, you know, you see it in the NFL or versus the MLB with a salary cap or no.
Get rid of the DH.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, I see it like a lot in, you know, I work in the racing industry, and every single year there's complaining about, you know, what team or what car is getting this concession or not. And you're always just going to have that. But it's not like, you know, oh, we're just going to stop racing. You know, I think they're always going to make sure that there is a flavor of Halo that will suit as much as possible the, you know, the needs of that community. But they also, I mean, the competitive community has to assume that they're going to have to evolve their skill set in order to stay good.
Well,
because if you take any sport, it's different now than it was 5 years ago or 10 years ago. And as an athlete or as a competitor, however you want to say it, like, you have to be able to evolve your own game to match up with how the game itself changes. And you can't complain, in my mind, you can't really legitimately complain that, you know, the rule sets are being changed and you can't keep up. It's like, you know, the best rise to the top.
I think that's a big issue that I have with the way some quote unquote competitive players, not just MLG guys, but anybody who considers themselves really competitive, they're like, no, I'm a pro Halo player. Mm-hmm. And my way of looking at it is, well, were you pro Halo 2 or Halo 3 or Halo Reach? Like, they're all different games. You can be really good at Halo 2 and suck at Halo Reach, and vice versa. They're different games, and they're not developed to be the same sport.
Or you can be like me and just suck at all of them.
Well, I mean, that's what I was going to say.
Professional, terrible player in Halo.
MLG...
Sorry, I just wanted to finish my thought there before we. But what I was getting at though is what I find interesting is that MLG community seems to have become less and less happy with Halo the more control over it they've been given. What I mean by that is that they have a wider range of customizable settings right now than they've ever had before. And yet, Reach is the least popular Halo game in MLG history,
and the best selling.
Well, that's not true 6 months ago. So they couldn't do the bloom that was screwing everything up 6 months ago.
But screwing up
is a relative term.
Exactly, because your average. I'm sorry, but I've spoken to lots and lots of people about this issue. Every single MLG player I've spoken to who has complaints about Bloom is because they're trying to play with it like it was a VR. Every single one. They're trying to apply the same tactics, the same approach to gameplay that they used in Halo 3 with Reach, and that doesn't work. You have to learn how to play a new game. And I can understand some people don't want to do that. They're like, no, but I've learned how to play Halo. I don't want to have to relearn all that. And my response is, no, you learned how to play Halo 3.
Yeah.
And right. Reach was a different animal. And I, every time you see people arguing about, oh, sprint needs to be taken out because then you get the people doing these rushing double beatdowns. Uh-huh. I'll say Bungie put tools in to counter that, like Armor Lock and Jetpack.
Armor Lock.
Oh, but you took those out of the playlist.
Armor Lock was, right? was so, broken, though.
It's not about broken or not. It's just about that it has a certain behavior, and you can learn to counter it. You can learn to deal around it, or you can just take it out of your playlist. But then that affects the balance of the game, right? I think Reach, when you put the whole sandbox all in, it's not perfectly balanced, but it's pretty well balanced considering how complex a sandbox it is. I'd say far more balanced than Halo 3. There's no single dominant weapon. There's no single dominant armor ability. They all have big advantages and big weaknesses. And as soon as you start taking pieces out, which is exactly what the competitive community does with their playlists, all of a sudden everything gets thrown out of whack. And so I feel like a lot of these problems have been created in the invention of these more competitive playlists. I don't find those same problems in the, you know, your average Team Slayer match.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Like, they designed the game to play this way. When you start taking things out, of course, it's going to be weird.
Right, whereas with Halo CE, they just learned to play what was there. And if something, like, I'm sorry, the pistol was wildly imbalanced compared to the rest of the sandbox, so everybody got really good with it. And suddenly it's balanced again, right?
What's funny is we're really actually lucky that the game is built to have such, you know, so many customizable features, even just by the player, much less by the back end, you know. I mean, they do a really, really good job with trying their best to you know, make it where the different sections of people happy. You know, it's funny. It's like damned if you do, damned if you don't, because if you try to make everyone happy, everyone accuses you of just trying to make everyone happy. And then if you just try to make one group happy, then everyone's like, well, you're not listening to us. So, I don't know.
They said that in the Halo 3 vid docs, that they were having a problem changing one thing and then the community blowing up about it.
Yeah.
I guess another thing that changed, or didn't change, but it talked about, was instant respawn.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, didn't they say that was...
Didn't Ricari have something to share real quick? Because he's got to leave for his birthday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what's up, dude?
Is he even there anymore?
Oh, he wanted to.
Oh, good.
Good stuff. No context.
I can talk about that if you want.
Is his mic even on? I don't hear him.
No, it may not be.
He's chatting. He's
hanging up.
Okay. Bye, Ricari. I love you.
You see you, Ricari.
Happy birthday.
Enjoy the pizza.
Just one more comment on.
Yeah.
Your thought, Nevin, before we go forward is, you know, Halo has a long-standing tradition of giving the MLG community what they want. Whether it's after the game's release and they adapt the settings so they can play in a style that they're confident in and that they want, it kind of says volumes that they're getting involved this early with that community to make sure that those things are going to be possible in the game and to learn from the things they didn't like with Reach. But I think you hit it, like, right on the head when you said that. You know, you can't treat a DMR like you did like the BR. You don't have to, you know, lead your shots, and having the hit scan in there is a whole different thing than what the BR was like altogether.
Yeah, it's all about just, you know, we've got a new game. Let's approach it as a new game. Let's approach it as, and this is, you know, exactly what part of what we wanted to bring up with Halo 4 is this idea of everybody's getting themselves worked up into a fuss over these little bits of information that we've been given that are wildly out of context. And I think we need to remember that, you know, this we want to play a new game, and so let's go into it with an open mind and play this new game. And
that segues right into the instant respawn conversation. Like,
yes.
I'm sure a lot of these features aren't going to be in every playlist, every game type. I'm sure that.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of this is in here specifically for customizability.
Soundtrack. Uh-oh.
I think it's worth mentioning, like, I was talking to Angel, like, at PAX, and I think a lot of the frustration, what people really want is they just want to play the game, and they're frustrated that they can't have it yet.
Yeah, well, that's what we do. We want it, and we want
a lot of it just comes down to, like they just haven't played the game, and they want to play the game, and they need to figure out everything that's in the game, and it's annoying to them that they don't have all the answers. Yeah. I mean, it's annoying to anyone who doesn't have all the answers.
And part of it might be that, you know, recent pains that they felt from Reach are still fresh. Those wounds still hurt a little bit, so they're a little bit nervous, you know?
Yeah, I mean, people get antsy. The important thing is to, like, relate those concerns in a mature way, and a lot of people just aren't doing it. Man, did I kill the conversation?
Grant, do you want to bring up Hedge Money's post on HBO?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think we should probably leave that to Jeff, but I had something else to say about the Game Informer article.
Sure. Yep.
I think something that people don't really understand is that Game Informer doesn't write articles for the Halo community. They write articles for a variety of, you know,
for shoppers.
People, yeah, for game consumers.
Yeah.
So when they write an article and they say, oh, this game is going to have random respawns, it's going to have random weapon respawns, instant, you know, player respawns, I think a lot of people took that out of context, and as a result, we end up with all this outrage regarding, you know, settings, and everybody's upset because nothing's like Halo 3 or Halo Reach, and I think it's because, I don't know, there's just a lack of detail that we have yet to hear about yet. So I think everybody's just kind of jumping to conclusions, overreacting, and I don't know, all in all, just being, you know, random internet jerks like always.
Well, I mean, you have to look at the gamer in general. We want things, and we want it now. And we're going to go to the wild interpretation of whatever we see is what we're going to, and yeah, however we interpret it is how it is.
There is a fine line between internet jerk and passionate fan. I mean, yeah, and all of us, I think, have probably crossed the line, you know, back and in forth, you know,
at least a
few times. And I've been like guilty, and I'm maybe one of the biggest like 343 apologists there is and supporters, and like I've been guilty too of kind of looking at one little aspect of something and harping on it and being like, oh man, I hope that's not it, you know.
Banshees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but at the same time, you know, and in talking about, you know, we'll talk about Hedge's comment later on, but like I have to look at it. I mean, it's just like you look at it overall, and I start to feel bad about it. Like, you know, I feel like, man, these people at 343, you know, some of whom I've been lucky enough to develop a great relationship with, you know, they're spending time away from their families, working super late hours, developing, you know, a product for us, you know, for me, even like just specifically, you know, as each individual fan. And man, the last thing I really want to do at the end of it all is just be like, oh, you got this detail wrong, you suck. You know, I mean, that's a lot of hard work that goes into that. I mean, you know, I mean, when you give something, when you put a lot of effort into a gift for someone or something that you're doing for someone, you know, you hope that it's received by the overall product and partially by the effort that goes into it. I mean, obviously, really bad products are really bad products, and obviously you don't want to buy a really crappy game. But when in the hell have we ever, ever gotten anything remotely a crappy game from the Halo franchise? Never. Like, not even close.
And you know what's funny?
Right, but, I mean,
no, but.
It's a different publisher now, and I'm not saying that 343 is going to make a bad game. I have faith, since most of the guys that are there specifically for Halo, that Halo's going to come out to be a good game. But it is a new developer, so
Okay, I agree, but why not innocent till proven guilty? Why not go into it assuming that the passion that they have for that is going to turn out an awesome product and then be surprised if it doesn't? I feel like 90% of the people are going into it going, well, you better not put out a product that sucks, and then they'll be pleasantly surprised when it's a good game. Like, that seems kind of backwards. You know, we're still going to have to wait just as long. Why not go into it with a positive mindset and have fewer ulcers and arguments?
Because that's not how we work, Jeff.
It almost feels like that's what some people are almost rooting for, though. I mean, a lot of us are on the forums every day, and like the amount of ire that you read is just, you know, mind-boggling at times.
But I think that might be something that they want to be proven right. They want to feel that sense of entitlement of being, oh, look, I was right, this game sucks.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. Then,
they totally bash on it all the way. Just, you know, there are people who only go into it looking for the remotest detail to complain about, just to get that sense of entitlement and, oh, look, you guys are wrong and I'm right.
I think one thing that a lot of gamers lose sight of is that most game developers make games that they want to make and enjoy, and that's definitely what Bungie did with Halo. I mean, they didn't expect it to be a good AAA title or anything, but they made a game that they were passionate about and they wanted to play, and it ended up being a good game. And for all these people that are hating on Halo, there's always going to be people that have some beef with every game out there. And if you don't like the game, go play something else. There's how many games out there that you can play?
Well, that makes me think of something that Jeff, do you want to maybe, while you're looking up the post on HBO, I can talk about this real quick, and then we can get to Hedge Money's post. I again brought this up in our email threads earlier today, but I was thinking about how so Halo's under, we've got a new developer. This is going to be their own spin on a Halo game, right? I think it's foolish to think that Halo 4 is going to be exactly like Halo 3. It's obviously not going to be. They're going to be changing things. It's been 5 years since Halo 3 came out, so the gaming, like video games, have changed in that time. They're going to have new ideas, new game types. Just everything's going to be different. And I was thinking about, you know, the difficulties that you have whenever you're releasing any commercial project or creative endeavor that is in some ways buried under the weight of its own history when it comes to the fans' expectations. And you know, Halo has such a huge reputation. Like, how do you change anything without people freaking out? And this is exactly what 343 is butting up against right now. This is what they're dealing with. And
well, so the only reason is because Halo is a big franchise. That's pretty much exactly. The reason why.
And this made me think of a few things. And a gaming related comparison that jumped to mind is what we're seeing happening right now with the Tomb Raider franchise. And I think they took a very interesting approach to handling this, because I'm not a particularly big Tomb Raider fan, but it's a big franchise with a lot of history. There's a lot of old school diehard Tomb Raider fans. And they're doing a straight up like reboot of the franchise. The new Tomb Raider game is going to be very different from the previous Tomb Raiders. And so what they did is, I think, was it last E3 that they came out with that trailer? I think it was last E3, right? They come out swinging with this trailer that's going out of its way to show off everything that's different about the game.
Oh, and gameplay like, footage too.
Yeah, they're
like
they're,
a whole like 10-minute sequence.
They were not precious or secretive about what they decided to show. They were like, we're gonna put all of this stuff right out there for you to say. Where it's a younger Lara, she's not tough and in control the whole time. She's going to be scared. She's going to be vulnerable. She's going to be, you know, in a dangerous situation. She's going to get, you know, knocked around a lot. And it's a completely different gameplay mechanic. They're showing all this stuff. And so what happens is, of course, there was this huge outcry from some of the diehard old school fans who are like, you know, we don't want to, you know, that's not the game we want. That's not what Tomb Raider is to us. But now it's a year later. I think the game is scheduled for late this year, if I remember correctly, or early next year, maybe. But at any rate, like now, a year later, like they showed this trailer and then they just went away for a while, right? We didn't hear very much about it. Now all of that fuss is it's old news. It's gone. It's that you know, they've lost the fans that they were going to lose, and now they have nothing but positive hype in front of them. They have nothing but, yeah, we made all these changes and here's why. This is awesome. This is awesome. This is awesome. And look at all these cool things that we're doing. And they don't have the whole controversy bogging down every single announcement that they make. And we'll see how successful it is by the time the game actually comes out. But part of me thinks that that's in a lot of ways a good way to go, because 343 has been so secretive about Halo 4 for so long. I kind of feel like they can't say anything now without pissing someone off, because everything they say is going to show something new, something that's changed, something that's different. And I think there's a little bit of an art to understanding that when you change, you are going to lose some fans, and that's okay. So maybe you should cut them loose early and say, we're going in this new direction. If you don't want to come on this ride with us, this is your stop. This is where you get off. And then you proceed from there with what you're doing, and the people that follow along are the people who are excited about it, and you'll gain new followers in the meantime, right? People who didn't used to be Halo fans, who maybe look at all the cool new stuff that's happening in Halo 4 and go, hey, that actually looks pretty cool. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah.
Nobody's really worried about that at this point, because I think they're pretty much, I mean, granted, they're still a new studio, but everyone in there is mature enough to the point where their opinion is, yeah, they should know that they're going to lose people, and they shouldn't be afraid to put stuff out there. Because, like you said, there's going to be people that are going to hate on something that they put out there, and that's just the nature of the beast. So yeah, why not? I mean, they shouldn't really be afraid of what they're going to put out there is going to piss someone off.
Because it's going to, no matter what
well,
they do.
Well, but I think there are certain approaches that can alienate or tend to alienate more than others. Like for instance, Nevin said, oh, they just put it out there, you know, at the very beginning. So when the game comes time to release, you know, you don't have all these angry fans. And, you know, that approach may work at the very beginning of development, but it might not be as effective towards the end of development.
Right.
So, I mean, it becomes more of a, I don't know, more of a marketing like strategy rather than just, you know, straight up releasing content from the game.
Yeah. And that's the whole other thing they're tied up with too, is knowing what to keep secretive, what to put out there. Of course, I mean, the flip side to showing too much too early is that stuff can still change, you know, and then you have the flip side of you've shown something early, and so now people expect that, you know.
I mean, I'm not against not showing stuff, but I mean, one of the things that a lot of people have had issues with, and I know that some of us have had issues with, is the non-information stuff, where they keep on teasing that they're going to give us some info, and then they give us more non-info than information. Although we did just get a whole slew of information, so I don't think we can really argue about that right now.
No, but
I mean, that has happened, and that did piss a lot of people off.
Well, let's transition that then to the other huge announcement that came this week was we now know who
composer.
Yeah, Neil Davidge, right?
Massive Attack.
Is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
Davidge, I think.
Or Davidge or Davidge.
Davidge, yes.
Davidge.
Davidge is the Davidge. French.
Davidge.
And I found this to be a really interesting, like, I think this announcement went exceptionally well for 343.
Yeah.
And because, and I think the way they handled it is they said, here's who the composer is, here's a little bit about him, and here's some of his music. And so
okay, some of that the music that you will hear for the beginning and ending of the show is some pretty good stuff. It feels Halo 4.
Yes, and yeah, it helps that the music's really good, of course, right? I mean, that's a given.
Is it like more in depth?
Sorry, what, Lars?
In depth about what?
Of the music itself, I'd like to discuss what we've seen. Basically, we've seen four, or maybe five, big sections of the Halo music, and I, for one, would very much like to discuss that with you guys.
Okay, so start discussing.
So what we've seen is what was released when they announced the lead composer was a audio track compiled of two different tracks for Halo 4, which consists mainly of a lot of percussion and brass and some strings and some woodwinds. And we've earlier seen with the making of Halo 4 video, we saw a new theme with strings, and in the composing worlds, we got to see some choir stuff and some.
I also really liked that he had like three or four Ebos setting on like, what was it, a dulcimer or something?
I was just going to bring that up. That was awesome.
Oh, I was like, yes.
After this little discussion.
Yeah.
So, like, what do you guys think of the music you guys seen so far? I know you guys love, especially the track that was released with the announcement. But what do you guys like? What do you think of the approach of like the audio director said of this combination of organic and digital music?
It definitely sounds Halo.
Sorry, you're going to have to speak up a little bit there, dude. We can barely hear you.
Well, sorry. I mean, it definitely sounds Halo. That's reassuring.
Yeah.
You can definitely hear some old nostalgia when you're listening to the new tracks. You can definitely hear certain cues in the music, too, I guess. If you played enough Halo, you would figure it out about 2.5 minutes in, it starts going all Flood-type music, so, I mean, you can...
Yeah, there's some bits and pieces in there that are definitely reminiscent. Yeah.
Bits and pieces.
You know what's funny? If you listen to all the soundtracks, like from Halo 1 to 3, then ODST and Reach, it's not like they all sound the same. I mean, ODST especially, what's really funny, almost everybody who has like a head, like just head and shoulders favorite soundtrack, almost all of them say it's ODST.
It's ODST, I know, it's weird.
Which is funny, it's the one that is most different from that classical Halo sound. So people are complaining like, oh, it's not going to sound just like Halo. You know, Marty, actually, I don't know, he tweeted tonight, I don't know if you saw it, he tweeted, and he just said, isn't it funny, or isn't it cool how you can gain a new friend without throwing out an old one? And he hashtagged it with like truth with the 7, you know, like, and to me, that's an obvious reference to, you know, the new guard kind of taking over with the Halo music. It's not like this new guy is rewriting all the other games' music. You know, each game has music that is indicative of that game. And Halo 4 and this new trilogy needs different music. It need, you know, we're going into this kind of like, you know, this theology of the man and machine, the Cortana and Chief, the, you know, is there forerunner technology? Is it inert? Is it alive? It is a very techno-organic theming of the whole trilogy. So why not have music that more, you know, that fits a little bit more than epic space opera, which is what Marty O'Donnell's did, for the original trilogy.
And we had a discussion on Saturday night, Sunday night at PAX, that like a big theme in the series is sort of this like meshing of the artificial and the organic.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that they seem to be doing that in the music. And I think that may going forward play a big role in a lot of the themes of the Reclaimer trilogy. And something that I think people don't quite realize yet is that it is a sequel, but in a lot of ways, it's actually a new franchise, because 343 needs to, and I'm sure they feel the pressure to really just like set themselves apart from Bungie while still being respectful of what's been built before. But they do need to do something different. I mean, in all honesty, I feel like Halo's sort of been waning off a little bit in the past few years. And I mean, people need something fresh and something that resembles a new game but keeps some core concept from the previous one, I think will be interesting to see. Hopefully they pull it off.
Well, you can definitely tell that some of the sounds that are in there with the orchestral pieces are very indicative of Halo and mm-hmm. the new digital stuff that's in there. It feels Forerunner.
Like
you immediately, once you hear those parts of it, you immediately associate that music with, oh, this is the new stuff that we're going to see in Halo 4. This is the unknown, really ancient, but highly high-tech stuff that we don't know about yet.
And it sounds kind of a lot like the Halo Wars soundtrack, too, if you were...
Yeah,
some of it. But
A little bit. I don't think it really sounds a lot like... I mean, I think there are some common themes, but I mean, I think it sounds... Yeah, I really like it.
Well, you know, I'm going to say that out of all the music we've seen, the sample we got with the announcement was the one that I liked the least.
That's my favorite.
I like
the Arrival. The percussion. Is that what you're talking about?
But, huh?
You're talking about the Arrival?
I'm not sure.
I actually like the one that was the Work at 343 video.
That was good too. Yeah.
That was a remake of Halo 2 music, which is going to go on the way on a big tangent, which makes me think, are they going to do a Halo 2 anniversary? Because that was Halo 2 music remastered. That was Halo 2 music.
But a lot of the Halo 2 music was remastered for Halo Legends. So it might be taken.
Oh, it was? Okay.
Yeah.
And the first look video.
Regarding the sample that we got, I was a bit like, I'm not like, that doesn't sound like Halo. It was that, to me, except for the percussion stuff, it felt like very bland. Like, it sounded very standard shooter battle-ish.
Oh, I didn't get that from it at all.
If that sample was all of the music that I have heard from Halo 4, I would be sort of disheartened. We've heard the music that's in the making of Halo 4. The strings there, the mystery there is. I love like those few lines of strings there and the choir stuff we see in the composing worlds. That's the unique stuff that I'm going for and looking forward to exploring and experiencing. This unique sound for Halo, which has always been. The themes for Halo is very, very unique for the series. And
Rival sounds a lot like Rainbow Six music. I don't know why.
And it's interesting that you should say that, Lars, because Jamie Griesmeier, who used to, if anyone's familiar, used to work at Bungie, I had a conversation with him where he said that the music is good, but it needs like a thing about it that makes it, at least the music that we've heard the sample, but it needs like a thing about it. And I actually completely agree, but I think that that's not the purpose of the track that they released. The purpose of the track that they released was to amp people up. It's to give them this sense of epicness. And
you know what that thing is that it needs? You need to play it. When I listen, you know, I last road trip I took, I had the ODST soundtrack on. And when that music is playing, I knew exactly where I was.
When they try to analyze and when they try to like get a feeling for video game music is that
the game itself is almost like the missing instrument.
Exactly. You're taking it completely out of context. You have nothing to associate it with.
And especially for that sort of music, it's very loopy. It's very standard. Very standard, like horns, like texture that just lies in there.
Oh, see, I didn't get that at all. I was actually very impressed by how much work they've done to change from all the standard textures. They sound familiar at first. You've got the strings in place. You've got the drums. It's almost like the way I sort of heard it in my head is like you could tell that
Jeff, you're echoing.
You could tell that that the composer has spent a long time playing Halo, and it's almost like he knows how to write music using the
Halo language, if that makes sense. Like the tone of the drums, the rhythm of the percussion, having the swelling strings coming in underneath, all those instruments play a certain role. They get a certain reaction from you when you're playing the game. And he's using the instruments in the same way that Marty would, but and this is something they show in the video as well, they would never just record a violin and stick it into the track. They'd record a violin and then run it through a guitar amp. Or, like, every single sound is changed in a way that we haven't heard before in Halo.
They're experimenting with it, yeah.
But, yeah, and so that's what I mean by the, like, to me, the overall texture is, like familiar, but it doesn't sound exactly like anything else we've ever heard before because there isn't a single sound in there that is left untouched. It's all tweaked and shifted and changed and to make something unique.
But I'm not really thinking about the texture. The texture is kind of unique, the sound of it, but like the musicality of it, the harmonics, the chord progressions, and the horn orchestration, the brass orchestration is very, very standard for the auditory of the scene. And that got me a bit disheartened if I didn't have the previous music that I've seen and the composing works that I saw later.
Sure.
But to me, the orchestration was very meh, if that makes sense.
I can understand that. And that's the thing is what Grim was saying earlier, and I posted this on HBO, that I said, listen, the big thing about Halo music up until this point is that we have experiences that we associate with it already. This is in a vacuum. This music doesn't exist with an experience that we can associate it to.
But you may
like it more once it's set to a gameplay sequence and it will remind you of that sequence.
But the same goes for the other music that I've seen from Halo 4, and I love that. I think that's unique. I think it's wonderful. Like, I get goosebumps when I hear the strings in the Making Halo 4 video. But I don't, except for some of the percussion and some of the textures and our dynamics from the sample that we got with the announcement, I'm not getting anything. I know that, like, when I get the context, when I play it, and when they get it right, when I get that whole experience, I will feel different about it. But that piece in vacuum didn't talk to me much. But the other pieces that we've seen that also exist in the vacuum did. So I feel that those pieces are much more superior than what we saw, and I'm a bit disappointed in that. So I got faith in that what they're going to deliver is going to be awesome because of the sounds that I've heard that I like.
Okay.
More than that, I don't think they're going to do a good job because I didn't like the one sample.
For instance, I think the one that they had in the Working at 343 video, that people, if anyone doesn't know, there's the video about Working at 343. There's a piece of music from Halo 4 that plays in that one, and I think that one sounds more like
the video just makes me mad
because we don't work there.
Yep.
Yeah, that video made my blood boil. But it's okay. I raged. I may have punched a puppy in the face. Oh well.
Jeff, do we want to move on to the?
I had that one thing I wanted to ask.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, go ahead, Dustin.
So for basically the entire Master Chief story, we've had the Halo theme, the ba-ba-ba-ba, that thing, for a while. Do you think that we will see that in the soundtrack, or do you think that they should just completely get rid of it and go with something new since it's a new trilogy? Because that's a really iconic piece to me.
At some point, we'll hear it.
I think you'll hear a few notes of it snuck in here and there, but I don't think we'll ever hear the theme. You know, either a new recording or an old recording. I think you might hear, in the middle of another piece of music, you might hear a few notes from that line snuck in to sort of remind you of it.
It was interesting that he was playing Never Forget, which is one of my absolute favorite songs. And it's one of my favorite to actually play on the piano, even just personally. And I was wondering, I wonder if they're going to sneak that one in there somewhere.
I think we're going to see bits and pieces of all of it, you know. But,
bits and pieces. Sorry. You gave that to me. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad Lars took it. I would have been disappointed if he had.
Yeah. Out of all the renditions of that sound piece, my favorite one is the Molinar mix.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's one of those pieces where I rock out to whenever I hear it, and I get goosebumps.
Yeah.
Can't imagine rocking it. Like, if there's one theme that I think we're going to see, then it's the monk theme, like the men's or the choir theme.
Yeah.
And I think if we're going to see it, if we're not going to see it in Halo 4, we're going to see it in the trilogy at some point. It's going to be saved for, and I hope it will, for some sort of big epiphany. Like in Halo 3, when you saw the second installation 04, when like the shutter goes up, the ring starts to like rise from the arc and the choir hits in, and I hope they're going to save that, just, you know, bring it home. This is Halo, this is new, but this is Halo, and make it something big. I hope they're going to do that, and I got a feeling that they will, but maybe not in full, but some of it, just to get that same feeling.
Yay.
Jeff, you want to switch
it's
gears?
It's one of those things that's like, I hope they keep that iconic part of the Halo soundtrack alive.
I think they
will dwell with it, but I think they might use it to certain effects, but I don't think they will dwell with it and use it to such an extent that Marty did.
Okay, let's go. Yay!
We'll be gone.
Aw.
Take it away, Jeff.
We were talking a little bit earlier about a post that a very, very good friend of mine, Hegemony, had made. Hegemony is a longtime HBO and Halo fan and lives in Australia. Just a genuinely very cool guy, has created some neat comics and stuff. But he's had his own bouts with being jaded about the transition, from Bungie to 343 in the game overall. But I think he really kind of came to a little bit of an understanding and epiphany on his own. He had to step away from it. And when he came back, you know, he really wanted to kind of share his feelings on it. He actually said that he had, you know, he listened to our PAX panel and said that he heard something that I said with the transitioning from the Bungie to 343 and how, you know, they don't go away. Like they can coexist, and he said he really started thinking about it, and he wrote up one of the best posts like I've ever read. I actually sent it along to 343, and a couple of the people at 343, Vic specifically, he said he about cried basically when he read it, and he actually made an account on HBO to respond to it. And let everyone know that he forwarded it directly to everyone in the studio to make sure that everyone saw it, to know what they were making the game for. And I mean, do you guys want me to just read the whole post, or do we want to link to it? Or
maybe a link to it, I guess.
Okay. It's just basically he goes through and I'll actually read just a little bit of it here, because he really makes some interesting, some neat jumps. He talked about having been on the site, and he said, I was one of the members who first joined because Halo Combat Evolved had this great backdrop that I wanted to explore more. For me, that's what it's the heart of a great Halo game: adventure and exploration. Fast forward to now, when I look back on all the Halo games, I appreciate them in many different ways. But that was then. All the elements that drew me into the universe in the beginning had become diluted over time. Large alien worlds, deeper mysteries, exploration. Halo, for me, was always about going to an alien world, kicking ass, and then blowing shit up. And that changed with Reach. It became about fighting an invasion. I missed that boy's own adventure element. He goes into to talking about how when you come to the forums, a lot of times it's basically, like, oh, I hate this detail. You know, screw you, 343. This isn't Halo. Oh, I agree with your hate, and it just kind of a dog pile on there. excuse me. And he says, he kind of closes with, he says, my time away on the mountain made me realize this. Everything I've seen so far from 343 is exactly what I want from a Halo game. All those elements that brought me into the series are now showing up in Halo 4 screenshots. I wanted a new Halo 4 game that was fresh. Comparing Halo 4 to older titles is inevitable. But here I feel that it's unfair and even unwise to do so. A new team, a new vision, new ways to play. No one is trying to take my Halo from me. All signs point to 343 wanting to give my Halo back. And, you know, he goes on more, but he basically just says, hey, you know, for the community, focus on this positive. You know, what are you really in this for? And he really sets up a great kind of introspective piece for that I think is good for everybody, especially big, longtime Halo fans to read. And I think one of the important things to draw from that is disagreeing or having the opinion that you don't like something is totally okay. You know, you don't need to, there's a difference between being glass half full and drinking the Kool-Aid. You know, like to me, you know, if I take, you know, Halo Reach, was everything about it something that I adored? No, there were pieces of it that I was like, man, I wish this was different. I wish that was different. But as a whole, it was a great game. It was a Halo game. And it was a part of the overarching franchise that I've dedicated a lot, you know, 10 years of my life to, and that I've had great memories with and family bonding moments with. And, you know, and I had kind of brought up in a response to him that, and I mentioned a little bit earlier, like, I mean, you know, I come from a really close family, and we are all, you know, we have a tradition like at Christmases and birthdays and stuff of giving stuff to each other that we spend a lot of time on or make or something. You know, and goodness, I would never think of one of my brothers giving me something and going like, oh, that's really cool, but, you know, I don't really like this little piece of it there, and it kind of ruins the whole thing, so try again next year. You know, like, what a dick. And I feel like sometimes, you know, we forget that the people that are making this game are really sacrificing a lot to try to give something as a labor of love is a phrase that's used too often, I think. But you know, it really is. They sacrifice a lot to give us something that they're really proud of and passionate about. And I would much rather go into it thinking that this is going to be awesome rather than thinking that it's going to be crappy. And, you know, I think it just kind of, if you go into it with a positive mind, it's just a much better way to bide your time when waiting for something like this. I can't wait till Halo 4 comes out. Absolutely cannot wait. And I would much rather look back on the time spent leading up to Halo 4 as being this really cool time of speculation and banter, but overall a positive thing, rather than being like, oh my gosh, this was just a huge negative thing and argument. Thank goodness they actually, you know, pulled it out of the fire and it didn't suck. You know? And I don't know.
Well, that's one of the things where it's like
that doesn't mean that you have to like everything. But it does mean, you know, that maybe we should change our approach and how we bring something to the table.
Yeah, but you have to realize that a lot of gamers out there don't take that approach, and that's one of the reasons why that opinion is out there. It's because we want it a certain way, and we're not going to take anything else. And it takes kind of a certain level of maturity to get past that.
I totally agree. I just wish that more fans would hurry up and get there.
And not to say that, because we're obviously fans of the franchise, and we obviously support 343. But it's not like we have blind faith in what they're doing. Like, I'm sure there's people out there listening to us that's like, well, you guys are just suck-ups and you just kiss the 343. And that's completely not the case. And in fact, we're probably some of the harshest critics of 343 because we're that passionate about what they're doing.
Yeah.
So you might not believe what we're saying, or you think that we're just suck-ups, but we do in fact care about what 343 is making, and we have a special feeling about this game that we call our game.
I have a special feeling, yes.
It's my special purpose. What?
What? Hey, what? What's going on?
What? It takes a certain amount of perspective to accurately, I don't want to use the word judge, but to kind of assess what 343 is doing with Halo and not really make it sound bad, but have an opinion about it where it's like, okay, this is something that they're doing. We need to just be supportive of them, of what they do. And if it comes out to be something that we don't like, then all right, life goes on.
Yeah.
But it's likely that 343 is going to come out and make a kick-ass game.
I, for one, yeah, that's how I feel about it. I can't wait to see what's in store, and I'm proud and super excited to be a fan right now.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, well, when it comes to, like, browsing the forums, I feel like as somebody who's, you know, avid forum goer, like, if I see, like, a thread topic that says, oh, 343 sucks, you know, whatever, I'm not even going to read that thread because, I don't know. Just people like that kind of are annoying. I'd much rather say, oh, what would you, I would rather read a thread saying, what would you like to see in Halo 4, or what do you think of the BR in Halo 4?
Or even if you were to title it, not sure about the random respawns, what are your thoughts?
Yeah,
and exactly.
Not necessarily over positive, but it's also not completely destroying it from the outset.
Right, you have to have a mature way of going about it, and it's not just throwing a tantrum and be like, 343 sucks, and I do it the way I like. It has to be like, okay, this part of really Halo I don't like, let's talk about it. You have to come about it with an upfront point of view that's not just completely bashing 343 for one little decision that they decide to do for their game, but have an open mind and an open discussion about it.
Yep. Agreed.
Well, anyone else have anything they want to bring last minute before we sign off today?
Just that, like, for all that it's worth, I want 343 to go forward and make a Halo game that is unique to their design, not try to cater it towards any sort of small talk from the community. Obviously, listen to the community, but I want the game to be unique. I want it to be full-fledged to their design ideas.
They should keep it to their design, but they should still give us the tools that we're used to, like making our own custom game types in Forge. That's what Halo 4 needs to be. It needs to be an experience, but it needs to still support the community at large.
That wasn't what I was saying. I was talking about all the complaining right now. I want them to go forward with confidence that what they're doing is going to be a great game. And not do it half-heartedly.
That reminds me of something that I just sort of in summation that I wanted to mention. I was having a debate on the forums a couple days ago with a user who was saying that they said that, you know, 343 should have just polled. They should have put a poll on the forums asking who wants Sprint, and you know, when they saw that most people would say no, then they would know, okay, we don't want to put Sprint in the game.
Yeah, because of course forums are a complete barometer of the entire player base.
Well,
right?
And what I said in my response was, I said if Bungie had made a poll back in 1999 when they were developing Halo, saying what do people want in a first-person shooter, everyone would have said, oh, we want Perfect Dark 2.
Dude, if Bungie had done that poll in 99, they would have said, stick to an RTS. It's what you're good at. FPS won't work on console.
Exactly. Great games are not made by putting up polls in the forums. Great games
They're not made by fans.
They're not made. Yeah. Well, and not to sound like a jerk about it, but that's true. They're not made by fans. Now they're in a situation where they definitely want to, you know, respect the fans and you know, give us something we will enjoy. And sometimes that means giving us something that we don't know we want. Giving us something like they have to have a design that they're excited about. They have to have
not made by fans is a bad way to put it because they're fans. I mean, but just, you know, not made by the general public is a better way to say it.
Exactly. The people
because
on
the general
team,
public sucks.
Don't crowdsource your game.
Yeah.
Now, they know what we want better than we know what we want.
Probably. Yeah. I guarantee that every single person on the 343 development team has put way more thought into Halo 4 than any of us have. Guaranteed.
And that's why they're on the development team.
Yes. Gregory, you had something you wanted to say?
Yeah, we talked about this in our last episode, so everybody from Podtacular, you may not, it might not apply to you as much, but there's a tournament going on over at Reddit, and we were trying to help promote it. It's happening this weekend. It's a free-for-all tournament at MLG setting.
On the rHalo subreddit?
Yes.
Yes.
There's about 300 people that have signed up so far, but if you guys want to sign up, there's still time. I believe the modcast says it'll be out tonight, and they're the last time that you have to sign up is tonight at midnight U.S. Central Time. So,
well, I better hurry and get this posted.
You mean tonight isn't Friday or tonight isn't Thursday?
Tonight isn't Thursday. So, I mean, if it doesn't get out, then oh well. I mean, I'm pretty sure they might let you do it if you do the date.
I guess I'll get mine out too.
But yeah. So if anybody wants to play in a free for all this weekend, it's Saturday and Sunday night, 6 p.m. It's free for all. The cool guys over at Reddit are hosting a tournament. I don't think there's any prizes or anything that I can see, but yeah.
That's very cool.
Check it out.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. That's very cool. And one last shout out I wanted to give before we signed off. I meant to do this at the beginning of the show, and surprise, surprise, I got sidetracked. there is a relatively new podcast out there called Dust and Echoes. And it's they're on their I think they've had 8 episodes out so far. They dub themselves the Fantastically British Podcast. It's two guys named Tom and the Wolf, and it is such a fantastic podcast. They are excellent co-hosts together, and they've had our very own. Dan Knightley has been a guest on their show before.
Yeah,
he was on talking about some of the fiction. He was fantastic, and I just wanted to give a shout out to those guys because they, they've mentioned the modcast a few times on their show. I was just listening today, and they were giving a big shout out to Playtime Season 3, shameless plug, and that they're doing a really really great job. They're always entertaining to listen to. So if anyone out there hasn't already, go check them out. It's you can find them at daepodcast.blogspot.ca. So it's Dust and Echoes podcast, and give them a listen. They're doing a great job. With that, I think that's
got
about it.
Oh,
you got another one, Dustin?
Yep. For the Podtacular beta server for the forums will be down for the next couple of days as it gets moved from one building to another. So no beta forum access. Hopefully that will give me time to actually update it. And next week, we will probably be doing a recording Monday. Not sure yet, but next Thursday, when we do our recording, we will be having Bravo, the MLG announcer, or one of the MLG announcers on our show to talk about the results of MLG Columbus and where Halo will go for Anaheim and the rest of the circuit for this year.
Very cool. Awesome. All right. Is that everything?
That's everything.
All right.
Oh, yeah. And keep on fracking trucks.
Keep on fracking trucks. That is right. Gotta make sure they get fragged or else they misbehave.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you very much. Messy. Thank you to Mike Marcoux, to Dustin Pettigrew, to Jeff Easterling, Lars Johnson, Scott Bradford, to Grant Cheney, and Gregory James. Did I get all that right?
And Gregory Lewis.
You could just say it's G. Lewis. Everybody knows who I am.
G. Lewis? Oh, sorry.
Everybody knows who you are.
Yes.
Thank you very
and
much.
I'm going to say thank you to all the Waypoint staff for making Modtacular possible, finally.
Yay.
Modtacular, episode 1.
Yeah.
Poderera.
Poderera, yes.
And
the name still stands.
And the modcast finally has a Twitter feed. I completely forgot to mention it before.
Oh, really?
It's been around for like 3 shows.
Yeah, I know. So you can get all your if you don't want to follow me and all my ramblings, I post all the episodes straight to the modcast Twitter feed as well. It's at
my forehead.
It's at WC Modcast on Twitter, and so you get all updates about the show there.
Is everybody here on Twitter?
No.
Now,
yes,
Twitter,
why
not?
We want to call it out real quick.
No.
Yeah, Dustin, what's yours?
I am at Duststorm, and Podtacular is at Podtacular.
Scott,
I am at Scott W. Bradford.
Lars?
I'm at I Warhead.
Koo?
At Sarcasm Bully.
Nevin?
At Bully.
At Legacy.
Say it again.
At Cruel Legacy.
And that's Legacy with an E-Y at the end.
Yes, that's right.
Grant?
I'm at Calamari Kid, spelled with a K and two D's at the end.
And I'm at Grim Brother 1, 1 M and O-N-E, spelled out.
All right.
Yeah. And last quick shout out.
And happy birthday to Rukari.
Yes.
Yay.
Yeah.
He's getting drunk
you can
right
follow
now.
Him at Rukizzle, R-U-K-I-Z-Z-E-L.
Yes.
Wait, L, yeah, I think.
Yeah,
you may make sure that you wish him a happy birthday. If you do not, the terrorists win.
Want to do a harmony?
Also, the game changes for Pawtucket listeners. The Game Changers film donation for Indiegogo ends in 9 days. So if you want to donate,
how much more does it need?
It still needs $23,000. They haven't raised that much. So they're going on a whole promotion spree this next week. So go over, check them out. It's GameChangersTheMovie.com.
Game changer.
All right.
That's my last plug.
I think that's about it for us. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Stay tuned to Podtacular and to the Waypoint Community Modcast, where we're both available on iTunes and all that good stuff.
And RSS. Dune.
Yep. So, stay tuned for more. And thanks again for listening, everybody.
Yay. Cheers.
Yay.
Yay.
Adios. Yay.